Hey guys, welcome to Backstage with Millionaires. I'm Caleb, your host, and today the guest that we have on the show is Siddharth Bagri. He's one of the co-founders and the CEO of a company called Praveg, and essentially what these guys are doing is building electric cars for very specific applications, but the first application is urban mobility. So I wanted to start things off. You guys actually founded the company in Jaipur, and now you're based out of Bengaluru, but I wanted to know, why did you guys decide to start Praveg Dynamics in the first place?
So we started in 2011, and primarily we started to build a good enough electric car because at that moment there weren't really many in the world. This is 2011, and we jumped right to it, and immediately thereafter, Dhawal's college.
What were the options in India at the time with regards to electric cars?
Globally, there were none.
Globally?
Globally, there was Nissan Leaf maybe, which was doing some numbers. There was the Tesla Roadster. That's it.
Wow. That's
there were a few in China, of course. I'm discounting China because those cars were not popular in the global car market at the time. So I'm discounting China. But besides China, there were just these two vehicles.
Sure. And obviously, that you guys were just starting off in 2011. But what was the sort of the, at that point in time, what was the vision that you guys had for Praveg?
It was quite simple, in fact. I mean, if you look at the consumer market, especially in India, around 2011, and if you look at most of the global market around 2011, really there were not good enough options available, not just for electric, but for anything. The cars are still getting way more interlocked by software. They are getting way more difficult to repair. They were getting a lot more difficult to work with and enjoy them as an enthusiast. So we really started on an enthusiastic front, as a car enthusiast, as an automotive enthusiast. However, middle of this decade, say around 2014-13, we kind of started to realize that even electric cars are not particularly the answer to the challenges that we face as a society.
What would you say are the challenges that we are facing as a society that not even electric cars can solve?
Even if today we replace all cars with electric cars, there is still a significant challenge. I mean, there's lots of challenges. So from a customer viewpoint, today most cars are undergoing recalls. Everyone is starting from zero. So whether you look at the Hyundai Kona, which was recalled a few weeks ago, whether you look at the Volvo Polestar 2, the Tesla 30,000 units in China, and so on and so forth. So everyone starts from zero. It is a technological development that is taking place. So now there are three broad challenges. Again, I'm going to come back to this one, which is resources. Second is sovereignty, and the third is time. So when we look at resources as a customer, when I buy a car, I basically lose 30% of my capital immediately before I even leave the showroom. And I have to get serviced, I have to get insured, there is an EMI to pay, there's parking headaches, there's so many hassles. And ultimately, what am I doing with the vehicle? So I'm spending a lot of money on resources. I am spending a lot of, the city as a unit is spending a lot of money on roads, on parking lots, and so on and so forth. Countries are spending in terms of various mechanisms for the entire industry. So resources are extremely strained because of automotive, because of our relationship, current relationship with cars, the way we approach cars. Second challenge is that of time. As a normal user of a car, I spend 90 minutes on the road on an average. Today, if you look at Bangalore or Delhi or Bombay, Hyderabad, a lot of cities in India now, increasingly so in the last 15 years, the travel time has quadrupled or more. So instead of 20-30 minutes, we're spending 90 to 120 minutes on the road today, which is a huge, it's a massive part of our lives, which we're basically spending on roads. And that's why you see a very fast growing niche of people who'd rather use Ola, Uber, and other rideshare applications, because it takes away the headache of owning a car. It takes away so many headaches. It's a very, very fast growing niche.
You can actually get things done in the car if you have somebody else driving you.
Exactly.
As opposed to driving yourself.
Exactly. Absolutely. So you save so much time there. And parallelly, you're also saving money, the resources. And in terms of sovereignty, the part that we spoke about servicing of cars, you start to lose real ownership of your own vehicles. It's becoming like smartphones. Today, we are license holders. We are users of our smartphones. We don't actually own them. We don't have the ability to repair them, increasingly so. And similarly, so is with our cars. It's very difficult to get cars repaired today. And along with that, again, if you go macro from an individual, from a granular resolution of a customer, if you go to a city or a country with data-driven services and vehicles, we are increasingly losing our entire data, basically. As consumers, I have no control over the data that my car is capturing or processing. As a city, I have no control over that. And as a country, it's a sovereignty challenge like never before.
Initially, what was the solution that you guys came up with? Was it this, or was it something else to begin with?
So definitely we knew that ownership is something that is passe. If you look at the ownership pattern, an average car is used less than 4% of its lifetime, usable lifetime. 95% of the time, it's just lying absolutely unutilized. So definitely it was in the direction of non-ownership driven stuff where we could increase from 4% to maybe 40% or 80% in a theoretical platonic ideal, we're replacing 10 or 20 cars with one car. So that is the kind of number that we want to achieve in terms of the tools that we provide to our users.
Definitely. So you've actually talked, you just earlier you mentioned Ola cabs, or like you mentioned cab services in general, right? And I wanted to know, for people who still don't know much about Praveg, what makes Praveg different from a service like that? Let's say about, like, for example, Uber or Ola, where it's the same concept, right? You don't own the vehicle, you're ordering a vehicle, or you're getting a vehicle brought to you, you're traveling in that vehicle, but somebody else is driving. How is Praveg doing things differently?
So we're building for that particular application. We're building everything around that particular application of moving from point A to point B. And Praveg vehicles, I mean, the Mark II that is going to come out, it's the best way to move in your city. Like the features that we have, the way you can take back your time, the way you can take back your resources, it's unprecedented, I would say, globally as an experience to be driven in before the robo-taxis kick in, that is.
Sure. So one thing that I have sort of read about you guys, and that really stood out to me, is that you're going to be working with fleet operators, essentially, right? How would you actually define that, right? What exactly does that look like in the real world? Like, who are these people, these fleet operators?
The fleet operators are people who have the operational expertise on roads, whether there are 40, 50 of these taxi guys in taxi fleet operators with a lot of cars, 200, 300, 1,000, 2,000 cars in Delhi. There are 30, 40 in Bangalore who provide employee transport services to most of the companies. So they are the ones who will be actually doing the operational side of things. They've got excellent drivers. We have a program in which we work with these fleet operators to train drivers, and it's a 3-month exhaustive training program. So, you know, you'll have the best chauffeurs in the country, you'll have the best kind of service in the country. So these guys know what they're doing, the operational guys.
So that's definitely an unconventional approach. When we look at EV startups, EV companies, typically it's all about the vehicle and getting it to the consumer, right? But you guys are taking a completely different approach. But another question that I wanted to ask you is, so far EVs in India haven't really taken off, right? It's not as common as countries like China. A lot of people have electric cars in China, electric two-wheelers as well. In the United States also, it's pretty popular. A lot of places in Europe, it's like exploding. But India, it really still feels like EVs are still sort of in their infancy. Why would you say that is?
So in fact, Caleb, there are a lot of reasons for that. In fact, if you look at China, China is the outsized leader of this market and the usage of electric vehicles. They're in front of everyone else by a huge margin, definitely. If you look at the top 10 most valuable automakers in the world today, 4 of them are Chinese startups, started within the last decade. And of course, number one is Tesla, which is again electric. So then 50% of the market is pure electric. And by sales volume, they would be nothing compared to the rest of the guys put together. So capital definitely is voting for electric as a future. India, in fact, has had fantastic mobility revolutions along the way. If you look at the first mass market electric vehicle in the world, it was an Indian vehicle called the Rewa. It's those little cute cars that were especially popular in London under the moniker of Jeeves. And Bangalore-based company, Chetan Maini, quite a legendary guy for what he has done. Second, if you look at Ola, Ola came out before Uber, which even when I found out, I was a little surprised that, okay, this it is surprising, you know, but it's the truth. I mean, fantastic stuff. If you look at the adoption then after in mobility applications in India, there are so many small state, city, zone, geography specific mobility ways that you will find. Like if you go to Gujarat, there are these Royal Enfields which are cut in half and the backside becomes like a trailer. So it's a motorcycle with a barn basically behind and you sit on the back and you go. There are one of the best electric sort of solutions in the world today is e-rickshaws, which ply like crazy in the north of India. Like if you go to New Delhi, Lucknow, Jaipur, so many other cities, e-rickshaws are everywhere. So as a true market product, it's a fantastic product. Which kind of brings me back to the question and the problem that we face as a country in electric vehicle, passenger vehicle adoption, is the Indian consumers, they're extremely smart. They vote with their wallet. They understand the nuances really well, and they have differing priorities always in terms of adoption of any technology or adoption of a new company and so on and so forth. So to give you an example, today if I come out with a vehicle, I mean not just Praveg, but any startup comes out with a vehicle which costs, let's say, 1 crore rupees, no one in India will buy that. There will be absolutely no market adoption. Why would you vote or bet on something that is, you know, from an unknown company and so on and so forth? That's because Indian consumers are prioritizing certain things, correctly so or wrongly so. It's not a judgment call, it's just the reality of life. There will be different priorities given, there will be different resource allocation given by consumers to different brands, to different technologies. So particularly in the case of electric, I think no one really is in a position in India to have come out with a class-leading product until now, but which is something that kind of does not allow for a company to invest in those technologies. So you see, it's a catch-22 sort of a situation. There is no consumption, there is no offtake, so why will I build those things? From an engineering viewpoint, it's not a huge challenge, honestly, today. I mean, it takes a lot of blood, it takes a lot of sweat, but it's not an impossible task. You have resources, you have a good team, you made them together, they'll do it. It's not that big a problem. But I think the problem really lies in realizing that the culture of the consumers, what they prefer, what they prioritize. B, there is a huge challenge of engineering talent today. And I think the challenge can be not just engineering talent, but also vendors. So these are the other two points, supply chain. I think we need a lot more ambition. India is at a precipice of time where we are undergoing a massive cultural change. And one of the strongest things that have come out is ambition. I think as a nation, we had been quite non-ambitious till the late 2010s. But now that thing is changing. I mean, people are building more ambitious products. People are building products and not just stuck in services, you know. I mean, the 2000s and the 90s are the dark era of Indian engineering. Like colleges are building engineers just so that they can get a job and serve, you know, go on phone calls with as tech support for the rest of the world. So maybe it was important at the time, maybe it wasn't. It's in hindsight, you know, there's no point in dwelling over the past. But what we see increasingly is more and more ambitious talent, more and more ambitious vendors who want to come out with better quality products, world-leading technologies, who are accepting unto themselves, especially people like Ola or erstwhile Reva, who are, those are the few shining examples, but today there is hundreds of them. There's so many good companies doing so many ambitious things. I think so far we lacked ambition, to answer your question. But now the ambition is there, and in droves.
The ambition is there and it's here, right? I think this, you know, your company, Praveg, is very ambitious. And I think the goals that you've set for yourself are just, you know, if you're able to accomplish them, it will change the country, right? But you've only just recently come out of stealth mode. It's sort of been for the last, basically you said from 2011 until essentially 2020, right? Things have been pretty low key. You haven't really shown off this vehicle, which is the Extinction Mark I, to the world. I guess you've been sort of working on it, perfecting it. Although there will be, the one that you're gonna be rolling out is the Extinction Mark II. So this is sort of just like to show people what you've been working on essentially. But just showing off this car has led a lot of people to compare Praveg to Tesla. That's something I've read all over, like even comments on the videos on our YouTube channel. People are like, oh my God, this is the next Tesla. This is the Indian version of Tesla, which is, right, they're excited. They want to see the Indian version of Tesla happen. But what is your response to that comment that this is, you know, Praveg equals Indian Tesla?
So in fact, in today's world, if we become the Indian version of any other company, so to start off with, it's super flattering, of course. I mean, anyone would be flattered. And I think people say it out of a place of love and ease of kind of placing things together. However, what we are trying to do here is not just redefine India or the relationship with cars in India, but increasingly so globally. Because the challenges of sovereignty, resources, time, it's not just applicable to India. If you look at Europe, it's constrained by resources today in terms of electric vehicle deployment. If you look at China, Japan, Korea, most of the developed world, most of the developing world, everyone would rather invest those resources somewhere else, right? And would like to take back some of their sovereignty that they're losing. So in an increasingly data-driven world, I think what we're trying to build is a divergence in the school of thought that of the typical automotive mainstay and the typical, I would say, Silicon Valley mainstay of approaching data and approaching all of those increasingly more precious resources. We're super happy about the decision that we always stayed in stealth mode. This car, for example, is a two-year-old car. We've kind of stopped work on it since the last year, except some upkeep and maintenance and data acquisition. But besides that, we don't really work on it anymore. The other prototypes are being built which for the future ones. It is definitely a product that we are building, trying to, not just a product, but an entire sort of organization to bring back control to the people for sovereignty, for time and for resources. We're not looking at a centralized data system, or we're not looking at it from the lens of the typical Silicon Valley approach, which is driven by data, which is driven by various sorts of usage or intelligence on top of that data, and so on and so forth. What we strive for is a very decentralized, distributed, open ecosystem. And this is a stepping stone. I mean, today we are making people movers from point A to point B. We have a 20-year roadmap for various particular niche applications and so on and so forth. But one of the common denominators in all of that is that they will be accessible in terms of technology, in terms of openness of this thing. As we kick into the robo-taxi era, these things will create a lot of problems. So we're kind of already in the robo-taxi era with the driver. I mean, that's how a lot of startups even work today. They have AI and they have a human working on Mechanical Turk, you know, behind. So it's kind of a robo-taxi today. It's just a human-assisted AI. Not really, but as we move away from where we are as a stepping stone into the robo-taxi era, I think these things will cause more challenges as single point of failures for entire countries if a robotaxi network goes down, or as single point of failure as a centralized service provider, whether it's a cab aggregator, whether it's a fleet provider, whether it's an OEM itself, and so on and so forth. So I think we bring to the table that divergence of approach to mobility as a problem as whole for the world, not just for India.
I noticed, I don't think during that entire answer you really said cars at all, even though like what you've built essentially so far is a car, right? It's an electric car. To me, it sounds like your vision actually sort of extends past that to a certain extent, right? There is the Mark 1, there's the Mark 2 someday, but you know, what I guess I'm curious to know is, what is your long term? You said you had a 20-year roadmap, essentially, right? I'm not saying you need to tell me all about that roadmap, but you know, what do you kind of see for Praveg moving forward into the future? You know, yes, for the next year or 2 years, but also in the more long term perspective.
So I think in the next, we'd rather talk broader strokes of the global trends that will definitely happen. We'll go from automotive to other data services and all. So looking back at, again, robotaxis, they will kick in the next maybe 3-4 years. The future is already there in certain parts of the world. The future will hit the mainstream of the world soon, maybe 3-4 years or so. And then we're looking at a lot of challenges pertaining to... at Praveg, I personally think that we have a very strong case for India being one of the fastest adopters of autonomous vehicles in the world. There's a very, very strong case for India for that.
Tell me, why do you see it that way?
So if you look at the cost of human life, we're at the moment in time where the cost of human life is skyrocketing in India. Before this, it wasn't really skyrocketing. It was plateauing till the 2010s. And 2011 onwards, it's kind of started to increase again.
What do you mean by the cost of human life?
There's a certain value to a human life that we as taxpayers or the society as a whole is deploying resources towards. So there's a certain cost. If you lose one person, a productive person, you lose X amount of value from the economy. Again, it's not the greatest metric, but it is what a metric that most of our policies are built around.
So it's skyrocketing?
It's skyrocketing. It's increasing like no one's business. So with the skyrocketing human life price or cost, we're also looking at the same amount of traffic deaths. We're looking at even more so. I think traffic deaths are increasing, road deaths are increasing, pollution related deaths are increasing, so many other things are increasing. So if you look at the cross section of a technological solution that could overcome all of these, it's basically autonomous vehicles can impact these two spheres a lot, specifically these two spheres. And I think that makes for a $1 trillion case for India to move to autonomous completely. How we get there is a big challenge. The answer is, in fact, we can get there today if you want.
But what's holding it back?
Basically, the problem is you can't mix humans and computers. So remove one from the equation.
Right. But then a bunch of people lose their jobs, right?
Right. So that brings me to the second challenge of sovereignty that robotaxis provide. So in fact, when we look at robotaxis or when we look at AI, we look at it from a very sort of centralized viewpoint of like, allow me the sort of literary this thing, but of the West, where we have societies which are driven by jobs, which are driven by centralized institutions where I go, do my job, come back home, I have a professional life, I have a personal life, you know, I go back home, I do my thing and things like that. Most of the world doesn't work like that. If you look at India, 80% of the people are self-employed, whether it's a panwala, whether it's a rickshawala, whether it's a cabbie, whether it's so many others, kirana store owners, small entrepreneurs, big entrepreneurs, so many. The gamut is huge. Most of the construction people are, self-employed people. They work as groups of 4-5 people and, you know, they go from site to site. They manage vendors, they manage suppliers, they manage relationships. And these businesses, if we can call them that, are super organized. They're super super good. If you look at your panwala or autowala, you will know that that person is on 360 days a year out of 365. That's more than most of the businesses are. That's more than what McDonald's can have as an uptime, or what Google recently has started to have as an uptime. So we have the culture, and globally also this is kind of true. So we have the culture of being owners of certain things. Now, when we look at, again, AI from a Western viewpoint, the relationship we have with AI, really, we think that the first instinctive reaction is to think that, oh, we'll run out of jobs. So that is true in a centralized economy. That is very, very true in a centralized sort of structure, that we will run out of jobs. That is when we don't own the AI. When we realize or when we accept that there will be one company who owns the AI and they're going to create the value and they're going to capture all of that value. Whereas at Praveg, that is the deviance that we're trying to bring in. How do we ensure that the AI ownership is a creation? So for ownership, you have to start from the creation of it. Otherwise, true ownership cannot, you know, go beyond a particular point. So how do we create, how do we own, how do we distribute this kind of technology, let's say, while retaining sovereignty of the individual owner, of the individual business owner? So to boil it down in a nutshell, I won't go into the specificities of each part of how we are approaching these problems. Maybe in the next 3-4 years, we'll have some results on this front. But what it will look like is, instead of me driving a car, I own a car. And then, you know, I manage my relationship with who's my energy provider, who's my charging provider, which tires to use, what to circulate, do this, do that, buy a new car, spread it across the country, spread it across the world. So I'll still be a taxi operator, but just not a driver. That part will be given out to a computer, basically. But then I regain control of all of those blocks of my life. And when we hit the robo-taxi era, I think that will be a huge problem for most countries. I think we are not prepared for the kind of, we are not prepared to accept the kind of dilution of sovereignty that will lead to as single point of failures. An entire robotic fleet can be taken out, and so many other issues. So I think that deviance is very, very important today, so that when we diverge in 10, 15 years, it'll be very, very stark, the two parts.
I just wanted to ask you, this sort of just popped into my head here. Looking at this, the front of the vehicle here, it says Praveg, which is the name of the company. And I wanted to ask you, what does Praveg mean?
So in Sanskrit, it means the highest attainable speed. Given the constraints, so technically, speed of light would be the, you know, Platonic ideal of Praveg in general relativity terms. It could be others; it depends on the physics that we are talking about. But it's basically the highest attainable speed given the constraints.
And also looking at it too, this is like kind of an unconventional license plate structure. Not the fact that it's green, but the actual letters and the numbers. What exactly does this mean?
You're going to have to find out.
Okay, it's like a mystery.
maybe right. Not. Okay. It's classified.
All right, good to know. So I guess it's, you know, sometime in 2021, maybe you can clarify around which period of the year it's going to be, but people will start to see Extinction Mark 2s on the streets of India, correct?
Right, absolutely. So hopefully around Diwali, which is November 21st, we should be on the roads, and to experience it, anyone can experience it. That's why we've reserved a part of the fleet. You can get on defy.city and get on the wait list and, you know, hope that we are able to deliver on time.
Awesome. Well, hey, thank you so much for taking the time
to
share the story of Praveg so far. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And best of luck. I really can't wait to see. It won't be this exact vehicle, but I can't wait to see the Mark IIs like actually on the streets of Bengaluru where I live.
It'll be fun.
Yeah,
it'll be awesome.
All right, thanks again.